Welcome to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
Even before the pandemic, an alarming number of young people struggled with feelings of helplessness, depression, and thoughts of suicide, and the rates have increased over the past decade, wrote U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. The COVID-19 pandemic further altered children and youth's experiences at home, school, and in their community, and the effect on their mental health has been devastating.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, and generous support from Lane County and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's February 11th, 2022 program, Kids Mental Health. How are they doing and how can we help? And my name is Karin Knudsen, and I'm City Club's president-elect. We think that today is a great time for a focused conversation on community mental health, and specifically on the needs of Lane County's children, youth, and young adults. Young people have had a unique experience during the COVID-19 pandemic, with this time occurring during what we might describe as their formative years or adolescence. And we're really pleased to be hosting a conversation today that can help us to better understand how kids are doing, how they were doing before COVID-19, what they've experienced during this time, and the mental health crisis that we are seeing today, and what our community can do to organize itself to help. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Kids' mental health, how they're doing, and how we can help. Today, we are so pleased to welcome Beth Stormcheck, PhD, the Department Head in Counseling Psychology and Human Services Department at the University of Oregon College of Education. Ellen Thornton Love, LCSW, Clinical Supervisor of Lane County's Child and Adolescent Behavioral Health Services. And Jessica Swenson, Psychiatric Occupational Therapist for Peace Health Child and Family Behavioral Health and Young Adult Behavioral Health. Biographical information for our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. In the fall of 2021, a coalition of the nation's leading experts in pediatric health, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and the Children's Hospital Association, issued a joint declaration of national emergency in child and adolescent mental health. 2 months later, in December 2021, the U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, took the unusual step of issuing an advisory on protecting youth mental health, which highlighted the nation's youth mental health crisis. All this came before Omicron variant was national news, coupled with a new round of uncertainty, school closures, family stresses, life continuing during a global pandemic. We know adults are hard-pressed to maintain their own mental health during this challenging time. How are children doing? Even before the pandemic, an alarming number of young people struggled with feelings of helplessness, depression, and thoughts of suicide, and the rates have increased over the past decade, wrote U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. The COVID-19 pandemic further altered children and youth's experiences at home, school, and in their community, and the effect on their mental health has been devastating. This program will deepen our understanding of children's mental health needs and the unique challenges that they face during these times. Experts in counseling, psychology, and education from the University of Oregon, Peace Health, and Lane County will share their thoughts on how support for children's mental health and where we can find access to high-quality, culturally competent mental health care in our community. So now our first speaker, welcome to the City Club of Eugene, Beth Stormcheck.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. It's great to be here in person, talking with you all today about this important topic. I'm Beth Stormcheck. I'm a professor in the College of Education, and I've been here at the University of Oregon for 26 years, working in the area of children's mental health, both in our community as well as nationally. So I'm excited to talk to you about this topic today. First, I thought I'd start with talking a little bit about where we were in the area of children's mental health before COVID, which kind of created what I'm calling here all the ingredients for a mental health crisis. Before the pandemic hit, nationally, only 1 in 5 students with mental health needs were receiving the services that they needed. And then as the pandemic hit, about 1.2 billion children globally experienced school disruptions. That's about 90% of our children in the world. Another fact is that students with disabilities or behavioral problems typically received most of their services at school, and that's a common model for us. Vulnerable youth were the most likely to be at risk, and they were already underserved before the pandemic. During the pandemic, children and families became isolated with limited school and social support, and that varied widely. So that's one of the issues that we're facing now, is that some families and children were much more isolated than others. And then, of course, children rely on their parents as a major support structure in terms of their development and their mental health and wellness, and parents were experiencing stress that impacted the amount of home support that they could provide for children. And some of those stressors included depression, anxiety, increases in substance use during the pandemic. That's the context that we were in as the pandemic hit. And then, of course, now we've heard a lot about the mental health crisis that we're in. We have escalated rates of depression and anxiety for youth, the highest they've ever been, around 25%. And that's really pretty stable across different groups of children and families that we're seeing nationally. For students at risk or with disabilities, they experienced the most service disruptions because our schools were so impacted. And 80% of those children and families were adversely impacted by school closures, and they experienced a service disruption. There are not enough services in our communities to meet the needs of families, and we're still experiencing low access and barriers to service utilization that continue to impact families and children. We have very long waiting lists for mental health services in our community right now, and that's something that we're seeing nationwide. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the impacts of the pandemic on children at different ages developmentally, and I'm going to start with early childhood. Right now, we're seeing a lot of new publications coming out and research looking at exactly what these impacts have been for kids who are in the various different developmental age groups. So let's start here. There was a very interesting study published this month about infants born during COVID-19. And the goal of the study was to look at whether or not moms having COVID-19 impacts infant development later on after the babies are born. And interestingly, the study found no difference between mothers who actually contracted the virus versus those that didn't in terms of their infant's development. What it did find is that all babies born during the pandemic showed delays at 6 months in gross motor, fine motor, and social skills compared to a normative sample before the pandemic. So it's very interesting research looking at those impacts that the pandemic had even on very early childhood. And we don't know what the long-term effects of that will be yet, but that'll be something for us to watch over time. Of course, we know during the pandemic, early childhood centers and preschools closed, so young children missed out on key opportunities for socialization. It has led to a crisis in staffing early childhood centers that we're still experiencing. We're really having a tough time staffing early childhood and preschool centers right now and need a larger workforce in that area. Key social and behavioral skill development skills and school readiness opportunities were missed, and I think we're going to see this problem persist for a while. What are the long-term impacts for early childhood? I think as these kids head into school, we're going to see some school readiness delays and behavioral regulation delays as they transition to kindergarten that we're going to have to think about managing as children make that transition to elementary school. So let me move on now to school-age children, kids who are in elementary school. Social opportunities for these children during the pandemic were limited and are still returning for some children. Here's where I think reading and math skills were really impacted, and we are going to see an increase in disparities that already existed in reading and math skills. And some children really didn't pivot to online learning and were not able to stay at grade level during this time period, and other children were. And so when over the long haul, when these kids are in school, teachers are going to be struggling with kids who are at very different levels in terms of reading and math and basic skills. And of course, we know that all of our kids have spent too much time online. And it's interesting to look back before the pandemic and think about our worries as communities and parents about children spending too much time on their phones and online. And then the pandemic hit, and that's all children did, right, is spend time online and in front of their computers. And that's going to be something for us to keep an eye on and think about how to pivot back away from. So some of the long-term impacts there: academic problems for some children, challenging transitions to middle school, disparities in learning within cohorts that will last for a while. And then in adolescence, we know there's been an increase in depression and anxiety. We've seen increased visits to the ER for suicide attempts and suicidal ideation that are 50% higher than we had prior to the pandemic. Very high rates of internet, social media usage in teens, and then missing of key milestones for many children, like most of middle school or the last 2 years of high school, and anxiety and uncertainty about the future. So long term, I think recovering from the stress of the pandemic and the transition to adulthood may be impaired. Anxiety, difficulty managing stress, and substance use would be things to watch out for in our teens as they transition to young adulthood. At the university, we run a clinic, the HEDCO clinic, that serves a broad band of our community and mental health services. And we've seen similar rates of things as we have nationally: higher rates of anxiety and depression in our clinic, higher rates of suicidal ideation in our clinic and in our research, about 20% of kids saying they've thought about killing themselves in the past year. Of course, very high levels of parent stress, and parents' challenges in managing what's going on in the home due to their own stress. And then other traumatic events, of course, illness, death, loss of jobs, health issues, those all impact children. And are that's a lot of what we're seeing in our clinics and in our research at the U of O. My research focuses on something called the family checkup, and I just want to talk about that a little bit. It's something that we've been studying during the pandemic, as well as utilizing and rolling out with kids and families. It's a telehealth model for helping families manage mental health concerns in their child. It's delivered on smartphones and a web-based application, and it provides parents with support around some of the key stressors they're experiencing, such as school support and healthy routines and figuring out how to manage things in the home when you're experiencing so much stress yourself. So this is a model we've been using in our clinic at the University of Oregon, as well as in our research, to look at how this can impact parents' parenting skills and healthy development for children over time. Next steps, I think for us, you know, I think that what we're really seeing is the mental health and behavioral impacts of the pandemic are going to be here for years to come. And some questions for us as a community: how can we serve more families and children? Are thinking about telehealth. Everything moved to telehealth during the pandemic, and a lot of our services are still online. Some estimates that 70% of mental health services are continuing to be delivered using a telehealth model. So what ways can we shore that up and provide more services to our community? And services, I know we're going to have someone talk about school-based mental health next, which is that perfect. This is the last thing I'm going to say, so it's a great transition. Services delivered in schools are going to be critical, and thinking about new workforces we can train to provide more mental health and behavioral support services to children and families in our community would be the next steps. Thank you.
Hello, and my name is Ellen Thornton Love. I am the supervisor for the Child and Adolescent Program at Lane County Behavior Health, and I also supervise our mental health services offered at three of our Lane County school-based health centers. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak and thank the City Club for inviting me today. The three school-based health centers that we have that we work with are at North Eugene High School, and that is with a partnership with Peace Health and 4J Schools. Churchill High School, which is also a partnership with Peace Health and 4J Schools, and the primary care provider for that is with Peace Health. Her name is Tricia Schaffner, and we work very closely with her, trying to provide as much as we can of an integrated model with physical and mental health. There we also have a school-based health center site at Springfield High School that is operated in cooperation with our partners at the Community Health Center of Lane County. We are in a transition phase now, but are going to have a permanent primary provider and a manager of that clinic, hopefully before the end of the year. There are two additional school-based health centers in Lane County. One of those is with Bethel Schools, And the other one is brand new this year at Fern Ridge School District. It's Elmira at Elmira High School. And I'm really glad that they are here. Just, I wanted to kind of explain the purpose and define the role of the school-based health centers. School-based health centers are funded through HRSA, the Health Resources and Service Administration. These funds are distributed from the federal government to our individual states, and in Oregon, that entity is the Oregon Health Authority. And they, in turn, have a school-based health center team that manages and oversights these funds, inspects the health centers, provides training to staff of the health centers, and supports the expansion of school-based health centers in Oregon through grant opportunities. Each school site is encouraged to be invested in the life of the school and culture of the school, so each one has its own unique flavor in order to serve the youth that are using the school-based health centers. Lane County Behavioral Health Child and Adolescent Team provides mental health therapy through the school-based health centers and works directly with school counseling offices, our primary providers, families in the community who seek services using those schools, and we also serve the wider range of 4J schools in general. In the past, we focused on serving the kids that were immediately served in these three schools and the elementary and middle schools that fed in, but during the pandemic, we had expanded it to offer services for any 4J student that requested it, and we are continuing to try to do that. The demand is extremely high right now, and the school-based health clinicians are just seeing as many kids as they can, as fast as they can. School-based health centers allow students and youth who are at least 14 years of age to seek mental health therapy. They can walk in and seek that on our own through laws in Oregon for minor rights. And they can also seek physical care at the age of 15. The law clearly states that we encourage and parent involvement is expected, but there are exceptions if a parent refuses a child to receive health services that they believe they need, if there is suspected abuse or known sexual abuse, if the child has been emancipated for at least 6 months or has been out of the home with a guardian for at least 90 days and is living independently on their own. For further information about this, you can refer to the Oregon Health Authority website, and there's actually a great information packet that explains minor rights and consent laws. At our school-based health centers, we work very closely as many times as we can with the families that are using services at the health center. We encourage children to invite their parents to meet the therapist and primary care provider that are served. And we also work very closely with the counseling department when they're referring families and children to us. The health centers not only provide treatment for adolescents, but children of all ages. Younger children must be accompanied by their parent and have permission for treatment. The mental health clinicians and the school-based health center staff meet several times a year, review what is working, what can be changed, and also discuss the needs in children of adolescents they are referred to for the services when needed. When needed, youth can be outside the school setting or through telehealth. They also can meet directly in person with staff, and we have made room for that and expanded spaces where children can be served due to need for social distancing. If students need privacy or and want to do telehealth, they can use a phone or computer with privacy at the school-based health centers, and they can consult with a psychiatrist or other health providers that are needed for specialty care at the school-based health centers. Prior to COVID, our school-based health centers were very busy and active spaces. We were constantly full and often carrying a wait list. Since COVID, that need is overwhelming. We receive both at the county and at our school-based health centers up to 18 referrals a day, and we only have a limited number of clinicians to provide those services. We work closely with our community partners to try to find services for children and families as quickly as possible and spend much of our time looking for sources for them and doing warm handoffs if we cannot serve them ourselves. At the beginning of COVID, there was a sudden shutdown and children were suddenly not having access to services at school. I thought that was a great point. Many children with developmental needs and other specialty needs received a majority of their services at school and those were suddenly gone. This left children and families in a very precarious position. Families who had no idea how to provide the specialty needs for children with autism, physical, and developmental challenges. They were used to having caregivers that could come into their homes. That suddenly stopped. And we saw a lot of families in crisis that we had to provide as much support as we could in the environment of COVID and social isolation. We noticed this year, since COVID started, an extremely heightened sense of anxiety and depression, which has increased throughout the pandemic. We are seeing children being prescribed medications at levels that never have happened before for anxiety and depression. I spoke with Tricia Schaffner to prepare for this presentation, and she is our nurse practitioner at the 4J schools. And she shared with me that as a nurse practitioner, this is the most that she's ever had children presenting to her with anxiety and depression and needs for medication in her entire career. I would like to note, on a brighter note, our suicide rate is actually slightly lower than it was prior to pandemic, and I believe that is because of the efforts of many people providing prevention information to suicide, talking about suicide, providing interventions and trainings about things like CALM, which is the reduction of lethal means, and also sources of strength, which are peer-based organizations and schools that allow kids to seek out other youth who can help them when they're in crisis. We are seeing higher rates of suicidality, however, and attempts. And we have reflected the same thing, that we are seeing about a 50% increase in emergency room visits, and that's across the lifespan of children from grade school through young adulthood. The school-based health center at Church Hill remained open through the pandemic and provided additional support for emergency and first responders at the request of the county. The North Eugene site, North Eugene High School, eventually allowed us to return back to our site at the school-based center and provide mental health treatment, even though the school itself was closed. And I believe that was a lifeline for many of our families and children, because we not only were providing individual mental health treatment, we were also providing supports and access for them to receive food boxes, who to talk to about getting assistance with technology. We worked with our local CCOs, Trillium and Peace Health, and they developed an entire fund so that we could get equipment purchased for youth on those health plans, which was a lifesaver for many families so that their children could retain school and also have outlets to other communication. The biggest challenges that I see right now are many of the ones reflected by University of our Oregon representative. Children have missed major developmental milestones. I just talked with Tricia also. She said she's getting referrals from the school constantly, looking for referrals for speech therapy for children who missed kindergarten and first grade and crucial communication skills. A lot of speech development happens not just from at home with your family, but from peer interaction. The children also lost that development of crucial social skills and how to interact, share, pay attention in classroom, and they're really struggling, and they're seeing behavior problems that they haven't seen before. So we are going to need to be able to provide not only support for our individual clients, but I think our schools to be able to support and maintain behavior in the classroom and also really work on social and emotional skills. I've been working with our 4J schools and looking at curriculums for social and emotional development that can be used K through 12. And they are going to try to integrate that in order to support this development, noticing this. In middle school, we see children who miss school and aren't really ready for middle school. And the freshman and sophomore classes who miss that crucial time through puberty to prepare for high school, we're seeing behavior problems and also social and emotional delays where they're not able to keep up with high school life and are really struggling academically. And for our juniors and seniors, we have seen them really struggling. They missed some academic supports and help that they needed. Their anxiety level is extremely high because they don't feel like they're able to be successful in the classroom. They don't feel like they have the foundation that they need to keep moving forward in school. This is reflected in panic attacks at school. Youth have reported real concern for their friends who seem to be struggling and wanting to know how to help them. Not all youth were struggling with telehealth, but enough of them were that it has left a significant impact in the classroom and in the high school population. Youth that graduated during the pandemic have struggled to launch. Many struggle with, what should I go to college? I don't want to go to online college. Some of them missed really key academic supports. They were passed and graduated, but they didn't feel like they had some of the skills they needed to be successful in college. And we've been seeing that in our practice, where youth that were fairly successful really faltered during COVID and trying to go on to college. And so we're just trying to provide them as much supports as we can. On the bright side, there is many organizations that we work with to support youth and families, and they have gone and made heroic efforts. We have an organization called WIOWA that we work with that helps youth in transition to get on their feet, learn about interviewing for jobs, how to apply for college, what does it look like when you apply for financial aid. This is all done through grant work. None of this is a charge to the youth or family. And we are working closely with this organization to help these youth in that transition age. Other organizations that we work with are Oregon Family Support Network. Oregon Family Support Net is a parent peer organization that any parent can go to for help and support as long as they have a child that have developmental disabilities and or mental health. They have support groups both online and in person, and they also have been actively providing food all over the county that it can be delivered to the home. All we do is make a referral that there's food shortage, and they work with that family and get them that food and get it delivered. They do have a limited delivery area, but they do it as best they can. And when we work with families that are outside their delivery area, they can bring it to our agency, and when their children come in for their appointments, we can give them those items, some of which we've literally delivered to families because of illness, death in their families, because of COVID. We have really worked to bolster those families. I think some big takeaways are there is tremendous grief and loss. When we think about the loss that many families have experienced, not just from COVID, but maybe family members whose healthcare was delayed. So they were much sicker by the time they got to the hospital. And we have children who come from families where they've lost multiple family members in the past 3 years. I think that is going to continue to be a difficulty for them and more support that we can have. I think the biggest barriers are we're losing people that do mental health because of the stressors they've experienced over the past 3 years of trying to maintain support for their community while they themselves were struggling with the pressures of COVID, like having 5 kids at home while they were trying to provide mental health treatment via telehealth, 8 hours a day. And so I think we're gonna really need to work with universities as well as high schools to encourage people to enter the healthcare professions and really support them, mentor them, provide educational loan support and or grants so that if they enter public health or enter mental health or physical health fields, they can get some support to get through college. I think also providing more ethnically and appropriate, culturally appropriate therapy and people that are educated about that has to continue to grow in our community. We get a lot of training through the school-based health center to work with diverse populations, including the LGBTQI population, as well as African-American and Spanish-speaking populations and Native American populations. But having more people that are representative of this culture providing service in our community will increase access to people who really need it. Next is Beth over here.
Hello. First, I want to thank the City Club for giving me the opportunity to present here today. My name is Jessica Swenson, and I'm a psychiatric occupational therapist working at Peace Health for the Behavioral Health Department. So what is a psychiatric occupational therapist? I say that anything we do that takes up or occupies our time is an occupation. So things like waking up in the morning, getting dressed, taking a shower, brushing our teeth, eating, going to school, and being able to focus and attend and regulate at school, talking with friends, doing things for fun, sleep, and chores are all occupations of kids and adolescents. And it's my job as an occupational therapist to work with children and young adults to make sure that they have the tools and the skills that they need to be successful in their occupations. Today, I'm hoping to share a little bit about how I've seen my clients affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, both generally and more specifically in the work that I do. I also would love to provide some tips and tricks for things that we can try at home when we see our kids having struggles, and then what we can do if we think a loved one needs help. So as we've heard over and over again today and have experienced in our life, there has been an increase in mental health challenges during the pandemic across all ages, including children. More and more children are experiencing challenges with anxiety and depression, and this is affecting how kids function. It's affecting their ability to focus and attend at school. It's affecting memory. It's affecting sleep. Kids are feeling more forgetful, more apathetic, and more worried or experiencing more panic. I think we can all agree we've had a very difficult last couple of years, and I'm definitely noticing that reflected in the kids that I work with. Something specific that I worked with and wanted to address today is called sensory processing, and some of the changes that I've seen with sensory processing over the course of COVID. So what is sensory processing? We all know the five senses that we talk about in school: seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. Got them all today. We also have what I call our hidden senses, so our sense of movement, which if I spin around in a circle, I know that I'm spinning, and my brain says, Jessica, stop spinning. And then our sense of proprioception, or body awareness. And this is controlled through receptors in our muscles and joints that tell us where our body is in space, how we're moving, how fast we're moving, and what we're close to. I think of proprioception as the sense that allows us to walk down a hallway and not ping pong off the wall or have to like stare at a wall and say, don't hit the wall, don't hit the wall as we walk. Our body knows where we are in space. Everyone takes in or deals with sensory input in all of these areas differently. Some people are oversensitive to input, which means they don't need a lot of input before they're at their limit, they feel like they've gotten enough. Other people feel like they need more input to be alert and to attend, and we call that understimulation or undersensitivity. So for example, I'm very sensitive to touch, which means that I cut the tags out of every single piece of clothing that I own. I have a seam ripper in my bathrobe and I rip out the tags because that's just not an input that I can handle. What someone who is over or understimulated looks different for everyone, but some examples of what it could look like are struggling to pay attention, seeming to ignore directions, being easily distracted, avoiding places that have a lot of input like grocery stores or crowded places, and not engaging in things that they used to enjoy. It can also look like shutting down or having outbursts if we get to a level where we're too overstimulated. And I think after spending roughly a year and a half doing online school, and about 2 years avoiding human interaction, a lot of kids are having difficulty as they return to school and life being able to process their sensory input and deal with that increase in sensory input that they're now having. Some things that you might hear from kids is, it's too loud there. This kid is clicking his pen and I can't handle it. I feel like I can't focus because it's too bright, loud. I feel like that person is standing too close to me always. So if you have a child or a loved one that you think might be experiencing overstimulation, there are things that we can do to help regulate our system. And what I love about these strategies is that they also work to help, they can help calm us when we're feeling anxious or worried, or alert us if we're feeling under-focused. So the first thing I always look at with kids is, okay, how can we decrease the amount of input you're getting if that's the issue? Can we give you earplugs so you don't have to have as much noise, or headphones? Can you put on sunglasses if you have to be in a super bright classroom? Things that we can do and change in the environment to decrease input can be really helpful. But unfortunately, we don't get to live in perfectly regulated bubbles yet. And so we also have to learn what to do to deal with it. So my three go-to strategies are, the first one is movement. Go move. Take a walk, have a dance party, do some jumping jacks, have an indoor relay race, or, you know, it's the Winter Olympics, so, you know, figure out how to luge through the hallway. Do something that gets your body moving. When we move, it helps our brains calm, it helps our brain focus, and it helps our bodies feel centered. The second strategy I love is called heavy work. Heavy work is basically movement, but with weight or resistance added. So if I walk down the hallway, that's movement. If I walk down the hallway pushing a vacuum, that's heavy work because I'm adding weight to what I'm doing and I'm adding resistance. We can also use the resistance of our body weight by doing push-ups or doing like squats where we're adding weight to, we're using our own weight to get that resistance. So any movement that you can do that adds weight or resistance is called heavy work, and it really is movement where you're getting more bang for your buck. And then the last thing I like to recommend is deep pressure. So deep pressure is the kind of input we get if someone gives us a big hug, which, you know, we don't do very much these days. It's input that goes through our muscles and joints and is like squeezing or is weight. So you can get deep pressure through a hug, a heavy blanket, a pile of blankets, a single blanket with cats on top of you. That's how I get my heavy weight. Turning yourself into a blanket burrito, or making a kid into a sandwich where you put a couch cushion on the bottom and then your kid and then a couch cushion on top and doing little squeezes. And that kind of input can be really calming. These kinds of proprioceptive inputs, which is the heavy weight, the deep pressure and the heavy work, send input to our brains, which helps our bodies feel centered and helps us orient our bodies, which helps our entire system orient itself and feel more centered and focused. So what to do if you think your child or loved one needs help? I think it's important to remember that a lot of us are struggling right now, and that is true of children and adults. Kids are experiencing their own struggles. They can also pick up on the tension and the anxiety and the worries that we have. And the world is really hard right now, so it can be hard to deal with all the things that are happening, and that can affect our function and how we do what we do. Something I really like to stress is that if we're seeing changes in our kids, not using labels like lazy or dramatic or worrywart, using these kind of labels a lot of times means that kids will stop talking about it. And if they stop talking about it, it might get worse. It might be difficult to figure out what's actually going on and why you're seeing changes in functioning behavior. I think instead asking questions like, it seems like you're having a hard time right now. Do you want to talk about it? It seems like you're struggling. What can I do to help you right now? Or what might be helpful in the future? Changing the dialogue around issues and struggles we see in our kids and adolescents can really help open up a conversation and help get them the help that they need. The biggest change I look for is change in functioning or change in how people do what they do. I think a lot of us are experiencing sort of a low to medium level of anxiety all the time right now. And that is true of all ages, but if it gets in the way of doing the things we love, of sleep, of going to school, of being able to regulate our emotions, that's when we want to look for help. And we've all touched on it today, but right now there is a shortage of providers in the community, and that is incredibly frustrating for both providers and community members. So I think some things that we recommend is making sure we're talking to our pediatricians and our primary care physicians. Even if it's in an area that we feel like more specialized help would be preferred, at least it's something, and they can often ask introductory questions and kind of start guiding us through the process. Look into community-run groups. I also have the Oregon Family Support Network listed as a great way to connect with community members and find support that way. And then reaching out to insurances or looking into other less traditional forms of getting help. Like, I know that right now that there's like a lot of online support that we can get. But just acknowledging that it is really hard right now and trying to find other things that we can do at home can also be very helpful. So again, I just want to thank everybody for being here and for giving me the time to present.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our YouTube channel and our social media pages.